I advocate for victims of church abuse. I've been doing this since 2001. I would say that I've heard it all, but every time I say that, some new case proves me wrong. Definitely, there is a lot of evil out there, and a lot of it has settled into Christian fundamentalism. Victimhood is a separate course of study these days as people who have been the victims of sexual abuse or other types of abuse become more vocal about what happened to them. And I'm not a psychologist or sociologist. I consult a psychologist from time to time. But the four stages of recovery that I define are my own. They are based on the outlook of Sun Tzu's Art of War, in which Sun Tzu sets up a hierarchy of virtues and places wisdom, credibility, and benevolence at the top. Sun Tzu recognizes that limitations on ethical purity limits the ability to wage war. He even advises where to place angry men, greedy men, ambitious men, etc., in an army so that their faults can be used to serve the greater good. But the general must be above wrath, greed, ambition, lust, etc., in order to be effective. The general must be both altruistic and realistic. After 9 years of observing people emerge from sexual abuse as children and begin recovery, I've laid out the path of ethical growth towards generalship as victim, survivor, soldier, general. In the art of war, illusion and deception, including self-deception, are the biggest factors in who wins and who loses, who gains ground and who must give ground, who ends up on the sunny mountain and who ends up camping in a swamp. All warfare is based on deception, Sun Tzu wrote. Implicit in that axiom of war is that all warfare is based on illusion, and all warfare is based on self-deception. No matter what form deception takes or who generates it, this is true. The lies we are told, the illusions put before us, including the lies and illusions we create for ourselves, endanger us and defeat us. And illusions abound regarding victimhood, and so for the sake of those who have been victims of church abuse or clergy abuse, an examination of what is real versus what is illusion will be helpful. Illusion number one. In Christendom, nobody has ever suffered like this at the hands of those who profess Christ. It would take you several weeks to read the real version of Fox's Book of Martyrs because it's usually printed today as a 6-volume encyclopedia-sized set. The version you see in Christian bookstores barely qualifies as highlights of what Fox actually documented and compiled. And most of Fox's documentation is actually witness accounts and even legal records of torture, execution of dissenters. To his credit, to establish facts, Fox can go on for 40 pages about a single case. But if you cut out all the documentary evidence that Fox recorded and just go to the accounts themselves of what people suffered, you will see that in the name of God, in the name of Christ, women have been raped, children enslaved, people locked away in silent and dark cells, men and women and children burned, starved, whipped, drowned, beheaded, etc. Sexual mutilation of women dissenters occurred frequently enough to be known. Fox wrote his book in an effort to stop church-backed and state-backed protocols of punishing religious dissent. But he is candid and clear that many who suffered were not especially dissenters, for they were targets of jealousy, greed, revenge of those who held religious power. Yes, that has always existed. Historian James A. Wiley also noted this. Some people merely had the misfortune of being rich and in the path of those sent to destroy dissenters, so their estates were also looted and burned, and they were killed too, all by people commanded by those who profess Christ. So what does that tell you? It certainly doesn't diminish the pain of a modern-day person who has been molested by a preacher and abandoned or even blamed by a church. But it does tell you that you are not alone. It tells you that if you are a believer, there is a cloud of witnesses down through history that are your allies in some sense. They also suffered at the hands of false religious leaders. Many survived suffering, subdued it, and lived productive, happy lives. All right, moving on, illusion two. My suffering is only suffering, and as such, it is meaningless. In fact, it has diminished my life's purpose. This idea will bring you down to the heart of the matter. Is there a God or is there not a God? Does life have purpose or does it not have purpose? If God exists, as Christians define him, as far as we can understand him, then suffering does have purpose, and the suffering each of us experiences is part of our purpose. Yes, your suffering, my suffering, anybody's suffering has meaning. And it may take the rest of a person's life to figure out what that meaning is. It will take humility, prayer, and reflection to work it all out. It always does. The worst way to treat suffering is for a person to try to get around it, like he or she is getting over a cold. Suffering is way more than a pointless, transitory event. Why? Because every person is way more than a pointless, transitory creature. Each one of us is made in the image of God, so we'd all better prepare ourselves for some godlike struggles against gigantic evil. The worst thing anybody can do is avoid that struggle. Christian fundamentalism is all about what you do, so the very people who continue to support those who commit abuses in fundamentalism will tell you to get over your suffering and, quote, get busy for God. The truth is, Christianity is about what you know. Suffering is given to us to make us know things we would not have otherwise explored. We are not worker bees or worker ants. We are human beings ordained to know God. Knowing God is the chief end of man, and Christ himself showed us that the path to knowing God as a human being often takes us through suffering. The next worst thing is to think you can, quote, put it all behind you in the sense that it won't affect you anymore. Look, when Christ rose from the dead, he still bore the imprints of the nails and the sword. In fact, before the throne of God Almighty, Christ is still a man. He has never lost the sonship of being the Son of Man. He is forever humbled as a God come in the flesh. So don't think you will not carry scars. What victims can hope for is that the scars are testimony of the glory of God, a weighty evidence that such evil did happen and that evil was conquered in the name of Christ. The choice of the victim is to forever be afraid, angry, and defeated by what happened, or to forever be empowered and enlightened by what happened. And then illusion number three, my suffering has rendered me helpless. Certainly that's what the tormentors of victims want them to think. Nothing would suit them better than to have victims of abuse begging and wheedling all their days. The truth is, victims of abuse are human beings made in the image of God, and they are not helpless. Nor are victims exempted from all the responsibilities laid upon their peers. Christian adults who have suffered are still adults. If they harm others, they are responsible. If they fail to care for those appointed into their care, they are responsible. Joseph, sold into slavery by his brothers and then unjustly imprisoned by his master, still saved the people of Egypt and all of Israel's posterity in a time of famine. He still refrained from revenge. And why is that? Because he feared God. I have no doubts that Joseph was raped as a slave. A teenage boy, a virgin, carried into slavery. I have absolutely no doubt that as a young man, he went through an initiation into slavery that pained him for the rest of his life. Yet Joseph, once he knew he was safe from his brothers, and he did put them through some paces as he tested them out to see if they would harm him or Benjamin, his full brother, never lifted a hand to harm them. True, they begged his forgiveness, which a lot of victims don't get. But hurting them was never a big motivator for Joseph. Rescuing Benjamin from them seemed to preoccupy him the most. The journey from victim to survivor begins with getting away from an abusive situation. The complete journey from victim to general, that role where a former victim is free to exercise command and carry out actions on behalf of other victims or on behalf of that which is good, is a long one. But it begins when victims recognize that they are still players in life's game, that they are not excused from responsible moral action, and that they can use their mind, emotions, experiences, and conclusions to thwart people who do evil and to assist the innocent. And there's more to say on this topic, but we'll have to pick that up in a later podcast.